Last Sunday was Pentecost, the Christian day that celebrates the Holy Spirit. It's a good time to reflect on what we Unitarian Universalists mean when we talk about Spirit. And of course, as good UUs, we may mean many different things, right? But there are some things we can say in general, especially as we look back at our history. So I invite you to transport yourself back to the 1800s in New England. There was a change happening in the churches. Orthodox religious ideas were being questioned, and our religious ancestors were right there in the middle of it. It was not only the question of the Trinity that was being debated. Remember, Unitarians believed that there was no biblical basis for the Trinity, that God was one, not three. But it was more than that, too. Was God really a vengeful, exacting God? Or was God a benevolent, loving presence? Were we all predestined even before we were born to be saved or damned? Or could we nurture our goodness and develop our character? Were humans depraved, born into sin? Or were we basically good creations of God? And what about reason? The Orthodox believed a literal reading of the Bible was all anyone needed for salvation, whereas these new religious liberals felt that the use of God-given reason must be paired with revelation. So the temperature in this conflict rised rapidly when Henry Ware, our religious ancestor, was elected to head Harvard, the primary training ground for New England ministers. It felt like a coup to the Orthodox. At that time, Unitarian was being used like a slur, meant to offend the recipient. So meant to offend, like you were like those Unitarians over in England. But as happens with so many slurs, ministers began to embrace it willingly, taking back its power. One of these was William Ellery Channing, de facto leader of the liberal ministers in Boston. After Henry Ware's election to Harvard, Channing delivered the next big blow to orthodoxy. He preached a sermon at an ordination service where he knew many other ministers would be. He titled it Unitarian Christianity. And it's probably the most important Unitarian sermon preached ever. It was an hour and a half long. Most sermons were pretty long back then. Don't worry, mine will not be today. And it persuasively argued all of those points that religious liberals were making. From then on, Unitarians claimed the label with pride. So this is where I bring us back to our topic of the day, our theology of Spirit. As the grounding text for that sermon, Channing used a passage from 1 Thessalonians 5. Do not quench the Spirit. Do not treat prophecies with contempt, but test them all. Hold on to what is good. Reject every kind of evil. So we say, let us use our reasoning minds and discerning spirits, yes, to question and test all the religious and ethical standards of time, which I know some or all of us have done, and reject every kind of evil. But he's saying here, too, do not throw it all away in the process. As the text says, do not quench the Spirit. Hold on to what is good. So fast forward 26 years later, and a similar message was given by another of our religious ancestors, Ralph Waldo Emerson, whose words we just read. So you know how these days commencement speeches are a big deal, given by celebrities and politicians and public intellectuals? Well, Emerson gave a very important commencement speech to the graduating class of Harvard Divinity School. Like Channing had done 26 years before, Emerson shocked and/or delighted his listeners with his revolutionary ideas. The first shock came at the beginning of the address, when he began not with a passage from the Bible, as was standard at that time, but with praise of nature. he began in this refulgent summer. It has been a luxury to draw the breath of life. The grass grows, the buds burst, the meadow is spotted with fire and gold and the tint of flowers. He continued on this way for some time, because his address was not only about the importance of reason and moral character, as we so often remember our Unitarian ancestors, which is true, but also about something we UUs are sometimes more hesitant to claim. Emerson emphasized the life of the spirit. He was one of the first to talk about what we now call spirituality. As you'll see in a moment, he called it the religious sentiment. So first, in his address, he rooted his theology in truth, what he considered the ultimate moral beauty. He said, "Speak the truth, and all nature and all spirits help you with unexpected furtherance." From this moral aspiration of truth, argued, springs what may be called the life of the spirit. He said, "The perception of this law of laws awakens in the mind a sentiment, which we call the religious sentiment, and which makes our highest happiness. Wonderful is its power to charm and to command." And listen to his spirit-filled language. "It is a mountain air. It is the embalmer of the world. It is myrrh and storax and chlorine and rosemary. It makes the sky and the hills sublime. The silent song of the stars is it. By it, the universe made safe and habitable. The sentiment is divine and deifying. It is the beatitude of man. It makes him illimitable. Through it, the soul first knows itself." So you can see in this Emersonian language our very first source of our six sources. Some of you know we have six sources from which we draw wisdom. And our very first source is this: direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. This may seem flowery or obvious or I don't know, but it's actually our pneumatology. Pneumatology is that word that means theology of the spirit or of the Holy Spirit. And it's very distinctive. So as Dr. Rebecca Parker says, it's distinctive because it's the idea that the spirit is directly experienced. Look at that, I don't even need a pointer. It's directly experienced. So it's directly experienced. We can experience it ourselves. We don't have to go, it doesn't have to come through a priest or a religious rite. It transcends any one of us and belongs to everyone. It's mystery and wonder, impossible to describe and beyond reason. It's affirmed in all cultures, perhaps differently, but connecting all of us, requiring of us humility and curiosity. It's what enables us to renew our spirits and keeps us open to the forces which create and uphold life so that we can join in that creation of life. So my colleague, Reverend Charlotte Arsenault, speaks of two concrete ways we can see spirit at work in our lives. She says, "A way to view the Holy Spirit is as that energy behind the transition from belief into action. Like the classic image on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, when God's hand reaches out to man's and their fingers touch, it is creation, manifestation. When we live out our beliefs, when our brain makes the connection to our heart and our soul, it is intentional, but creation is never fully controlled." She continues, "We can also see the Holy Spirit facilitating moments of vulnerability, most visible when we drop our guards, lower our walls, become childlike, much of what we witness today during our joys and sorrows. When we apologize sincerely, when we love without hesitation, when we do good simply for the joy of doing good, when we dance, sing, or pray, in these moments we are said to be led by the Holy Spirit." she says. So I wonder, and this is really a true wonder, if even the atheists among us could be open to that idea of spirit. Not necessarily as something supernatural that we call upon for aid, but like Emerson said in our list of reading, within us is the soul of the whole, the wise silence, the universal beauty, to every part and particle is equally related. The eternal one, when it breaks through our intellect, it is genius. When it breathes through our will, it is virtue. When it flows through our affections, it is love. Who would not want that in their lives? So quench not the spirit. Hold on to what is good. As free-thinking religious roles, we do not have to throw it all away, keeping only reason and depriving ourselves of this life of the spirit that Emerson describes. I think back to our religiously liberal ancestors in the 1800s who did resist the orthodox beliefs of their time, but did so without quenching the spirit. In our own time and place, often seemingly surrounded by religious voices that spurn reason, that feed off of fear and superstition, we can tend to respond by not wanting to look anything like them. No emotional blaze, no room for anything transcendent. But we can, in fact, hold on to reason and still give ourselves over to the life of the Spirit. We can be curious about a mystery working in our lives and in the world, even when we cannot fully understand it. Even when we feel we might look silly, we can sing when the Spirit says sing. Dance when the Spirit says dance. We can fight when the Spirit says fight. We can rejoice when the Spirit says rejoice. May it be so in your spirits.